happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hammond. I'm back.
I was going to say, I'm trying to point to you, but I'm going the wrong way. Yes, and I'm Ann Northrup, and yes, Andy is back. So here we are again.
And thank you to Maren Johns for filling in while I was away. Shall we get to the news? There turns out to be a lot of it.
Sure.
After the anti-gay murder of O'Shea Sibley in Brooklyn, the community turned out in grief and anger, and the suspect, 17, has turned himself in and has been charged with murder.
Yeah, he didn't want to turn himself in, but that was his only real option. The College Board says it wouldn't offer its AP psychology course in Florida to students there unless it continued to include sexual orientation and gender identity issues. We'll let you know how the state responded duplicitously.
A ballroom icon and a gender nonconforming force in documentary making have died.
And a top Olympic gymnast has come out.
The World Bank has suspended lending to Uganda over its draconian anti-homosexuality law.
About time. New rules for donating blood went into effect this week, enabling some gay and bisexual men to donate who could not before. But it's very complex. We'll try to explain it.
All right. I'm going to review a host of gay-themed plays in London, some of which may be headed to America.
You got a lot of them. Billy Friedkin, who directed two big Hollywood hits, as well as films of The Boys in the Band and the vigorously protested Cruising, has died.
And a movie about the gay son of the U.S. president and his affair with the gay heir to the British throne is dropping this week online.
That is fiction, people, not a documentary, just so you know.
All right.
Don't get too excited.
Well, we start out again, and you spoke a lot of him last week, the death, the murder of O'Shea Sibley in Brooklyn, which was back in late July. We have a picture of him. He was such a beloved dancer. Look at his work. That's him with the Alvin Ailey extension who he danced with. His funeral was held on Tuesday in Philadelphia. It was a huge turnout. And of course, the news is that a suspect has been apprehended. Now, news reports initially said that Dmitry Popov turned himself in, but what happened?
Well, he did, but it was, the cops were on his tail. They knew who he was. They were about to nab him. I'm slipping into cop speak here. And so there was a deal negotiated with his lawyer to have him walk in. That's a very common situation. The more interesting thing at the moment is that this has all been described at some length as a confrontation between the gay black men and Muslim men from Brooklyn, because the story is that the attackers came out of the convenience store at the gas station, saw O'Shea and his friends having a good time, dancing around the car, shirtless after a day at the beach. And the guys who turned out to be the attackers said, hey, cut that out. We're Muslims. We don't like that. Stop that dancing. And then they got into a confrontation.
And O'Shea, of course, was described as trying to defuse the situation. And he's
yes. Although the video shows going back and forth from both sides, there was an attendant at the gas station who really tried to come between the two groups. and they separated, but then something must have been said on one side or another, because then they came back together, and then they were apart again, and then they came together again. The video shows that. It doesn't show the stabbing as clearly, but O'Shea was going towards one of the guys who took out a knife and stabbed him.
And O'Shea's father, Jake Kelly, said his son was a peacemaker, someone who tried to defuse confrontations.
Well, and sure, and that makes perfect sense. But in the heat of the moment, people get exercised. No one really walked away from this ultimately, and thus we end in tragedy. So the story at the beginning of this week is the alleged killer's mother saying he is not a Muslim. He is a good Christian boy. And therefore, this was not about religion, and people are mischaracterizing it. Well, may
I say something about religion? Because, you know, I mean, initially it was Muslim. And so the Mayor Adams had a Muslim representative condemning the crime. And we're against this and we condemn this.
And Muslim leaders came out with gay leaders to show solidarity and say, you know, we all think this is horrible.
Right. These religious leaders rarely get asked, what does your religion teach about homosexuality? I mean, most of them condemn homosexuality outright, say it's going to send you to hell forever or whatever. It's a grievous thing. And we know how it's treated in many of the countries where these religions, including this one, dominate. And there's some responsibility for that. These are ugly teachings.
Yes. Well, we have reports of the confrontation. We don't know for sure who said what or what led to the actual stabbing. But this attempt to change the narrative by saying that the stabber was not Muslim, it discounts any possibility that his friends are Muslim, that they're not Arab Muslims. They may be Eastern European Muslims. We don't know. We don't know enough details, but there are attempts to rewrite the narrative. The end game here is that O'Shea and his friends were simply dancing for fun, got confronted by this group, and it ended up with O'Shea's death.
So there's been an outpouring of grief and resistance in the community. There was a memorial at the Stonewall. There was a big memorial at the gas station where people engaged in voguing as an act of resistance.
We have a picture of the gathering the second night at the gas station. Look at that. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people showed up at the gas station.
Mostly people of color, we should note.
Yes. And let's show that little video. So voguing is an act of resistance has become one of the slogans around this story.
And O'Shea was a character in house culture called Vogue Femme. And he has, as has been written about him, he wasn't interested in toning himself down.
No, he was quite out loud and proud. And as many of us say, after a childhood of being scared and closeted, when he came out loudly and joyously. There were celebrities at the gas station big gathering. Kevin Alliance was there. The major Beyonce backup dancer on her current tour was there. She, of course, posted a remembrance of him, and her backup dancer showed up. Queen Jean was leading a lot of the memorials, and you know, there has been enormous energy around this, more so than a lot of the horrible deaths we've seen over the months and years.
And this Dmitry Popov was charged with second-degree murder as a hate crime. However, 17 apparently has a long criminal record, but because of his age, they're not releasing that.
Yeah, I'm surprised his name got out at 17. Is that appropriate for us to be repeating his name as a 17-year-old?
Got it from the press. I mean, I think he's going to be tried as an adult. I think that's the sense. We will see.
We will. We continue to really mourn this horrible killing and sit in awe of the outpouring of love and support.
And we also are mourning this week the death of a ballroom icon, Carmen Extravaganza, star of the ballroom documentary Paris is Burning back in 1990. We have a picture of her. Died at the age of 62, born in Spain, grew up in D.C., started getting gender-affirming care at 16 and underwent gender confirmation surgery at 18. Became a house mother in the House of Extravaganza in 1999, was a runway model in the 80s, and made the cover of the Village Voice in an article by our friend Donald Suggs, Venus Envy, The Drag Balls of Harlem.
And she died of lung cancer at 62. They tell the story of her talking to another trans person, a trans woman, I guess, who was, proudly talking about their transition. And Carmen's famous for saying, "But that voice is still there." And that has been reinterpreted as a statement of people not being forgotten and still being present. And so people are using that phrase that she said to remember her too, and O'Shea.
And we're also mourning the loss of Jess Search this week, one of the leaders of Doc Survey and a force in documentary filmmaking. Dead at the age of 54. Why don't you talk about Jess, Anne?
Well, Jess figured out very early on that she was gender nonconforming.
As you see from the picture.
Well, what's so cute about that and why I'm laughing is she, somewhere in her teens, I think, or maybe when she graduated from high school or college, realized that she had no appetite for jobs where she was going to have to wear standard formal clothing. So she said, "I'll go into the media because I don't have to dress up there." A sentiment with which I concur.
That's reminiscent of Martha Shelley's account of her early work life.
Yeah, well, it's wearing golf shirts and jeans for many years. So anyway, she was a legendary documentary maker in London. Worked as a mentor to many people, made many famous documentaries. Like, I don't know if you saw the one, Alexis Arquette, She's My Brother, but that was one of the ones that stood out. And something called Queendom about a Russian queer performance artist. She was described as
Queerdom? Queerdom?
Queendom.
It was Queendom? Okay.
She was described as ragingly courageous and resolutely funny. That's an epitaph I envy. And she also said, if you're going to move people to act, first you have to move them. And she was someone who, we're going to talk about Billy Friedkin and his major movies, but I wanted to talk about Jess Search because she set out with a mission to improve the world by making documentaries. And Billy Friedkin is not setting out to improve the world. And I really appreciate Jess Search's values and goals.
She is survived by her wife, the producer and director, B.D. Finzi, and their two kids.
Yeah. Much mourned in the documentary world.
Well, do you want to talk about Billy Friedkin now, as long as we've mentioned
him? He's next on our list. Go right ahead.
Well, Billy Friedkin, the director, you know him as the director of The French Connection and The Exorcist. Those were his two mega hits in the early 1970s. He's died at the age of 87. But before that, and there he is directing The Boys in the Band, He directed The Boys in the Band using, we have a picture of the cast, the original off-Broadway cast, a film that in 1970, as a 17-year-old, I went to see several times just to get a glimpse of gay life in New York. I don't know if it was the best glimpse, but we all went to it.
I saw the original play and was not made happy by it.
But he also directed the movie Cruising. It came out in 1980. It was produced in 1979. There's Al Pacino as an undercover cop looking for a gay serial killer. Written by non-gay people. So he's investigating. He goes undercover in the leather bars. At the time, he was a star from The Godfather and Serpico. We held massive protests against the making of this film right in Greenwich Village. Because we felt we had read the script, we'd gotten a hold of the script, and it was a cruel portrayal of gay people. And there were hardly any positive Hollywood portrayals of gay people in those days. So that's what it was all about. Now, I know there were gay serial killers, and, you know, we got Jeffrey Dahmer and John Wayne Gacy and Richard Rodgers of Last Call on HBO right now. But Friedkin's depiction of gay life at that time was very offensive. He later tried to justify it in interviews by saying, oh, well, it was my response to AIDS. Now, AIDS hadn't happened yet in 1979. You know, it was something he just made up in his head. And I don't know how it's a response to AIDS anyway.
Well, the thing that astonished me about Billy Friedkin is that he got Jean Moreau to marry him.
I know. That was very disappointing to read.
What was that all about? But only for a couple of years, and then they separated. But he was married for the last 25 years to Sherry Lansing, a very strong, powerful Hollywood producer,
right,
who survives him.
By the way, speaking of Last Call, they had me do a podcast with them about the history of Gay USA. So, and so that I'll give you a link to that.
And I keep getting notes from people who are catching up with Last Call and really liking it. And I have to say, I liked it too. And what I liked most about it actually was the cops on screen saying, "Why do you have to bring up the gay stuff?" No, that's not at all relevant to this serial murder case.
They act like they're so professional and objective. I mean, there's even a scene where I'm confronting Greg Kelly, the police commissioner, and saying, "How can you do this? You belong to anti-gay organizations." And he goes, "I'm a professional."
Yeah.
And that's the way they act like they're neutral about all these things, but nobody is. Come on.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Well, while we're talking about people we've lost in the last week or two, let's also talk about Bill Brusca, 76 years old, a local New York guy, nightlife impresario. He managed a lot of clubs in New York City and Fire Island. He produced off-Broadway and concerts. He was a big music producer, Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, U2. And he was also an AIDS and gay activist. So he was a significant member of the community, died at 76. Sorry to read about his death.
Shall we get into our news from the States?
Sure.
Well, let's talk about that College Board controversy. You've all read about it. College Board has an AP psychology course, 28,000 students in Florida take it. And they said, look, we're not offering it in Florida if you're not going to include gender identity and sexual orientation, which has been included for 30 years. So that some kind of a joint statement came out with the Florida Department of Education, where they say the course can continue, including the section on sexual orientation and gender identity. But a lot of questions remain about this.
Well, they said it can be taught in whole as long as it is age appropriate.
And they won't define what that is.
Well, so, it's the standard set by the Don't Say Gay law. Well, and so this is all regarded as smoke and mirrors by the Florida Department of Education. It's confusing education departments across the state. So some counties are saying, well, we're not going to teach it. And others are saying, well, maybe we'll teach it, but, you know, maybe we'll leave out the gay stuff because it's not clear what they're going to do to us. So they've accomplished nothing with this. Plus which, someone, a gay professional who's gone through the curriculum and actually looked at it, says it's nonsense.
It's not very good. It's not very strong. It's not very in-depth. And some districts are already shifting to Cambridge International, which did agree to remove sexual orientation.
It's worse.
From its psychology course.
Yeah. So the one in the College Board curriculum was written 30 years ago, has no facts.
And for this, you get AP credit.
Yeah.
Advanced placement credit.
So now we're in the position of, well, do we defend this course that is empty and useless, or do we what?
I suggest if people want to be up on things, they should watch Gay USA. Now, you've heard that Ron DeSantis has shaken up his faltering campaign team three times in the last month. Now he's elevated James Uthmeyer. Is that how we say his name? Uthmeyer?
I don't say his name.
To be his new campaign manager. This is the guy who was the architect of DeSantis's most reactionary policies, from Don't Say Gay to the war on Disney to the 6-week abortion ban. And note that DeSantis's pandering isn't good enough for some of the anti-abortion groups who are still pushing for a federal ban outright, and he won't say that he's for that.
Well, here are a couple of other things going on in Florida. First of all, the economy that he has been touting as booming for the last year as he runs for president is tanking. They are losing tourism, they're losing convention business, and they're going downhill because he has succeeded in giving Florida such a horrible reputation, plus which they're now discovering leprosy in Florida, so that's not encouraging tourism either. So that he's losing that as one of his selling points. We've discovered that the Orlando Magic basketball team has donated $50,000 to the DeSantis campaign because they're owned by the DeVos family, right wingers from Michigan. And you remember Betsy DeVos. So $50,000 to DeSantis. And when this became public a week or so ago, the players on the Orlando Magic said, "What the hell are you doing? This is contrary to everything we stand for."
Most of them are Black. And of course, the governor is quite racist and is fighting education about real education about Black people and, you know, treating slavery like something that helped Black people.
And the team has done a lot of, you know, pride nights and contributions to the Pulse Memorial and stuff like that. And yet the DeVos's are stepping up to send $50,000 of Magic money to DeSantis. And one other new confusing moment in Florida, the state education officials now say that the Don't Say Gay laws and standards only apply to classroom teaching, not to libraries.
Well, that's because, the book Tango Makes Three was removed from a school library in Lake County, and the students sued over that. So that's when they came up with the statement that you're talking about.
Because Lake County has decided to reinstate And Tango Makes Three in the library. So we may be pulling back some of that.
Also in Orlando, two dozen survivors of the Pulse massacre in 2016 have filed complaints with the police department. They want a criminal investigation into whether insufficient exits, ad hoc renovations, and lax code enforcement contributed to the staggering death toll there. There were 49 killed, 53 others injured. City officials and the club owners say it was up to code, but those trying to escape were thwarted on many fronts when they were trying to get out of there. There were obstructed exits. It wasn't even licensed as a dance club, by the way. So a negligence lawsuit has yet to go to trial.
We've also buried the headline this week, which is the Ohio vote.
Oh, well, we haven't talked. That's wonderful.
Extremely encouraging. Well, this is what we've been seeing over the last few years, that when the voters finally have a chance to vote on issues and people, we end up winning.
Yes. 7% to 43%.
Yes, so very encouraging. But most encouraging of all was the turnout of 3 million people.
But now, of course, it does go, you know, don't want to get overconfident. It goes to the voters in November now, a reproductive rights amendment, which will overcome Ohio's, what, six-week ban on abortion. And so we don't know entirely. I mean, obviously, there are some people who voted not to give away their democratic rights who don't like abortion either, but we'll see how it turns out.
Yeah.
If it turns out like Kansas, we'll be happy.
I find it encouraging. The American Academy of Pediatrics board voted 16 to nothing to affirm their support for gender-related care for youth. Now, they also said they're going to do an updated review of research, just so everything is up to date. But they are going right on record to say that they support this, which is great.
They represent 67,000 pediatricians, but they also condemned the legislative bans on treatment that have rained down on trans people.
And a couple of relevant court decisions, one good and one bad in this area. In Ohio, a federal judge upheld a law mandating the use of preferred pronouns for students in schools, said there should be no bullying in or out of school, and noted that trans kids have been abused and deserve support. And also said that students should be allowed to use the bathroom that is appropriate to their gender identity.
Then there's this really, really grotesque decision from a MAGA judge, a guy named Brantley Starr. He ordered three attorneys to work for...
In Kentucky.
Okay. He ordered three attorneys who work for Southwest Airlines to
Kentucky coming up.
Okay. I'm not even sure what this is, but it's a lawsuit versus Southwest Airlines. To undergo religious liberty training from, wait for it, the anti-LGBTQ hate group Alliance Defending Freedom. Now, this all came in response to a lawsuit from a flight attendant who allegedly was tormenting the president of the Transportation Workers Union with images of aborted fetuses and images of women wearing headdresses that look like vaginas. I mean, it's nutty. And this is religious freedom. And she won her suit. She got $5 million in damages, reduced to $800,000. But the judge objected to Southwest Airlines sending out an email that said, Southwest Airlines does not discriminate based on religious practices or beliefs. And the judge said, you're pretending that you won the suit. You didn't. But they said in the email, we lost the suit, but we don't discriminate. The flight attendant was also upset that the email encouraged employees to treat everyone with civility and respect because, you know, implying that she didn't.
Well, she didn't. She sent hundreds and hundreds of these emails. Yes. And Southwest says she was not fired for her views. She was fired for harassment.
Right. And the judge cited biblical passages in ordering the training for attorneys from the hate group, which he called an esteemed nonprofit. This judge was a legal advisor in Texas to the impeached Attorney General Ken Paxton, and he was the architect of a lot of his anti-LGBT policies. A federal judge for life.
Imagine having to sit for training from the Alliance Defending Freedom. Uh-oh. They're gonna raise money off of that for decades. But now to the heinous judge in Kentucky, if I can find that. A federal appeals court upheld the law outlawing trans youth health care in Kentucky and forcing detransition for those already under care. Some states at least allow you to continue the care if you've started already, not Kentucky. No mandate for using correct bathrooms. No sex ed that includes mention of LGBTQ people or sexually transmitted infections. You can't have that in sex ed. And no respecting preferred pronouns. That's the judge in Kentucky.
And I want to add one other thing to the Ohio thing. You know, jillions of dollars were poured in by the right wing all over the country to try to get that thing over the finish line, and they failed. But one of the things that they did in their ads was to say it would allow doctors to perform sex change operations on children without parental consent. this is the ads that they were running. They're, of course, as we know, they're shameless.
I want to go to my house. They're relentless, and they're liars, and don't they have better things to do?
Yes. Yes, and people in Oklahoma do. We have a happier story. The first rural Oklahoma Pride was held, founded by people from small towns. We have a picture of them. It was held in, say the name again, Anne?
Prague, Oklahoma. Spelled like Prague, but pronounced Prague, because this is the U.S. of A.
Population 2,500, an hour east of Oklahoma City. They got the mayor on board, and the gays and the city council donated the park space. I don't think a council has to donate park space. You just use it. It's public space. Organizers got some death threats, but the event went off as scheduled, and they plan to do it again next year.
Good. Maybe we should go. Also good news from Mississippi, where a black gay young politician, Fabian Nelson, has achieved runoff inclusion for the November election for a state House seat. Mississippi and Louisiana are the only states in the United States that have never elected an LGBTQ person to their state legislatures. So this is a chance for a breakthrough in Mississippi.
Fabian's a gay foster father of four, a black military vet, and a pastor. He's been selling real estate for the last 15 years. He's trying to get Mississippi to accept Medicaid expansion, $500 million from the federal government. Good luck with that.
Well, I say bless you for that. You know, this has to take place in small towns everywhere and cities. Virginia.
In Virginia, focus on this story a little bit. It's a little complicated. Last year, Governor Youngkin, terrible, signed a bill requiring school boards to notify parents about sexually explicit materials in classrooms. It cited masturbation, intercourse, and homosexuality. Well, now homosexuality is off the list of sexual conduct. And it was done in exchange for a bill where they're going to go for age verification on porn sites.
It doesn't mean they're going to get all progressive about homosexuality. It just means they're not saying it explicitly in this law.
There's some acknowledgement that homosexuality is not just conduct. It is our identity.
Well, yes, but that doesn't mean they like us any better.
Okay. In New York City, anti-gay vandalism outside the Flea Theater in Lower Manhattan there, a man objected to LGBTQ content on screens outside. He came up to them and said, you know, this is terrible. What are you doing? And then he smashed the three screens. Well, they haven't captured him yet, but they are investigating. And then in Brooklyn, a homeless man on the promenade has been threatening gay couples and others with anti-gay slurs, causing some to avoid the promenade entirely. Police are also investigating a brutal slashing of a 22-year-old man there. And the suspect there hasn't even been identified. One man who was threatened supplied police with a photo of the perpetrator, and the police say there is more than one to watch out for, so tough times.
Please, you can find that in almost any neighborhood in New York, and I don't say that to scare you about New York, but it's just quite common to see people who have mental illness on the streets who spew this kind of language and are threatening. In New Jersey, which we think of as very progressive, but the State Board of Education held a vote that came out just 6-5. We won by one vote, updating the Equity in Education Code, adding sexual orientation and gender identity to the code. The right wing is freaking out about this in New Jersey. They held a prayer circle at the meeting of the State Board of Ed. And the vice president of the Board of Ed says he doesn't believe in transgender people.
Well, you know, people are just unhinged at this point, obviously.
They are.
And because they get fed this stuff constantly on Fox News and whatever else that they read on the internet. I mean, a friend in Chicago said he was on a train and there was a trans woman there, kind of visible as a trans woman there on the train. And these two older women sitting behind her just started insulting her and screaming at her. And my friend went up to them and just said, "Stop it. You know, what are you doing?" You know, and they're like, oh, they just feel entitled if they see trans people or gay people to just start assaulting us.
Well, this is all Donald Trump.
People.
This is Donald Trump entitling people to speak like this on every subject.
Oh, I hope the judge shuts him up. Shuts him up this week.
Nothing has shut him up yet, and you see, in spite of the order, he's saying exactly what he wants.
Maybe he can cool his heels in prison. Got to stop. Stop.
He'd love that. He'd love that. Then he could stop traveling, and all the guards, I'm sure, would be very, very nice to him. In Houston,
unlike to his friend Jeffrey Epstein,
exactly. In Houston, Texas, the law has caught up with famous opera countertenor David Daniels and his husband Scott Walters. They have pled guilty finally to the 2010 sexual assault of a young singer, Sam Schultz, who they took home after a concert in, I don't know, New Mexico, maybe, drugged him and raped him. They've been sentenced to 8 years probation and put on a lifetime sex offender list.
We have a picture of Schultz. He said he was pleased by the outcome. He said the men, you know.
It's a sad story.
Terrible.
All right, shall we move on to international news?
Yes, I think we should.
Okay, let's do. All right. And nice little story from where you just came from in the UK. A goaltender for the Arsenal soccer or football team, Aaron Ramsdale, 25 years old, says he's tired of staying quiet when people make homophobic or racist remarks. He's 25. His brother is gay. He is not. But he has now come out as an ally and promises to speak up in the future.
And someone who has come out publicly is Olympic gymnast Tomas Gonzalez, 36, in his new biography. He competed in the last three Olympic Games. He says he realized he was gay in his mid-20s, but it took a long time to come to terms with it. He cried over it. But in 2012, he realized he couldn't be closeted anymore, wasn't enjoying gymnastics. He'd won 9 medals, including 4 golds at the World Cup. 2011, he was ranked number one in the world for floor and vault. There were 186 out athletes at the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, but only one gymnast, Caitlin Roosekrantz of South Africa.
Yeah, not Tomas. He appeared on the Chilean version of Dancing with the Stars, and his biography is called Here You Dance.
In Israel, we have a picture here of Maria Betanova and Alona Selicheva. They're a same-sex couple who married online in Russia, conducted on a video call with authorities in Utah. You got all that?
Salt Lake, you know, the Mormons will marry anyone around the world.
So the lesbian couple petitioned the high court in Israel, and when the immigration authority wanted confirmation that Russian authorities were okay with Utah marriages, even though they don't recognize same-sex marriages. You know, same-sex couples are fleeing, so they're recognized in Israel. Same-sex couples are fleeing Russia. The Israeli authorities said recognition is specific to this case, but their attorney said it should set a very important precedent. By the way, also in Israel, the right-wing party's spiritual leader called for a war on LGBTQ people in this new one.
Yeah, he's been convicted of rape and other things. He's not a great moral figure in Israel. In Venezuela, in the town of Valencia, 33 men arrested at a gay sauna a couple of weeks ago. 30 were released, and now the last 3 have been released. They were accused of indecent acts in a public place, a sauna, a gay sauna.
It's a private business.
Of course. They're
subject to big criminal penalties. 5 years for gathering with intent to commit a crime, 3 years for this indecent acts thing. So.
And noise. They've been charged with excessive noise. It turns out that the Venezuela government, which is a big mess, that's the clinical term, has been conducting repeated raids of HIV and AIDS organizations and places like this.
In Malaysia, a follow-up to the controversy over the ban, the 1975, Matt Healey condemning Malaysia's government homophobia, and sharing a same-sex kiss on stage. The Good Vibes Festival is now demanding damages for his behavior that ended up canceling the rest of the festival, and they're pursuing claims in an English court. Now Healy kissed a male fan at a 2019 concert in Dubai in defiance of their anti-gay laws and proclaimed, "If you're gay, we love you and God effing loves you." So it was nothing new. And he did it with a male fan in 2022 in San Diego, too.
Okay.
He likes those kisses.
We got to move along. You have a lot of theater reviews. In Uganda, you know about the Kill the Gays bill. Well, the World Bank has been pondering this for a while and has decided to suspend lending to Uganda as requested by gay activists. This sets the good thing about this is it also sets a standard for the World Bank in and how it's going to handle situations like this.
They're asking for mitigation, and I don't know what exactly that's going to entail. Pope Francis gave reporters a generalized statement that everyone's welcome in Catholic churches without offering to change anti-LGBTQ doctrines. On the plus side, he said homilies should be limited to 10 minutes, that more than that was torture.
All right. And Eddie Izzard?
Well, yeah. Sure. Eddie Izzard is, you know, he wanted to run for as a member of parliament from Sheffield. He was not nominated by the Labour Party. So he shifted to Brighton, which is really a gay neighborhood.
Yes. And I think
he would be the first trans. She would be the first trans.
But she did lose last year in Sheffield.
She didn't lose. Guess, they didn't get put up by the party.
The incumbent in Brighton, I think, is retiring.
A Green Party member, yes.
Yeah. All right. AIDS news. Well, this is all about blood donations by gay and bi men. These are rules that were proposed a few months ago and are now going into effect. You can donate blood, but if you've had anal sex in the last 3 months, no. If you're on PrEP, no, because they claim that taking PrEP can mask your HIV. But if you're on PrEP, you don't have HIV. You're preventing HIV. You're taking it when you're HIV negative. Of course, if you have HIV, you can't donate, even if you're undetectable and untransmissible. And your sex partners can't donate either. A three-month exclusion if you've had new or multiple partners in that time, whether you're gay or straight.
Right. This does mean that people who previously could donate won't be able to based on their behavior, and that includes non-gay people. By the way, one of the first persons to donate was Cody Kinsley, who's the health commissioner down there in North Carolina. Okay. All right.
Entertainment news. I don't watch Stranger Things on Netflix, but it's a big hit. And one of the stars, Noah Schapp, who came out a while ago, said he came out because he played a character who was struggling with coming out. And that if he hadn't played that character, he might still not be out. So congratulations to him. But Wayne Brady, the comedian, actor, and host of Let's Make a Deal, has come out as pansexual. He also played Lola in Kinky Boots on Broadway. Right. I think.
Others who have come out as pansexual include Demi Lovato, Miley Cyrus, Janelle Monáe, and Ella Thorne.
Well, you know, people get comfortable with different words, but congratulations to Wayne.
On Amazon Prime, the gay-themed Red, White, and Royal Blue rom-com, pairing the son of the president, Uma Thurman, with the heir to the British throne. No, not Hunter Biden and Prince William, but two young men. That's going to drop on Amazon Prime August 11th, and it's written and directed by Matthew Lopez, who won the Tony for The Inheritance on Broadway. It also features Stephen Fry.
And because I got cut off a couple of weeks ago and I tried to do this before you get into your theater reviews, I'm going to say thank you to Whoopi Goldberg, who I'm usually here criticizing because she included Chris Cooper's book, Better Living Through Birding, on her list of summer reading suggestions. Thank you, Whoopi.
And congratulations, Chris.
Yes.
Okay, so I saw a bunch of plays in London, not as many as I usually do, but a lot. I saw the stage version of Brokeback Mountain. Now, this stars Mike Faist and Lucas Hedges, actors who were really kind of closer to the early 1960s cowboys in the Annie Proulx story in The New Yorker than Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal were in the Ang Lee movie, although they were fine. It's on stage at Soho Place. It really brings us more into their forbidden love and the violence they faced. And that is often the fate of men like this who are just trying to be true to their lives. And I think that's probably going to transfer to New York. And at the Donmar Warehouse, I wasn't expecting a gay theme at a play called When Winston Went to War with the Wireless by Jack Thorne, starring the always fine there, Adrian Scarborough as Churchill and Stephen Campbell Moore, who was in History Boys, as the first head of the BBC. This is 1926, and Churchill is lobbying Reith to get the BBC to support the government's position of the general strike, which was a very historic thing. And Reith wants to maintain independence of the media. Sound familiar? A familiar theme? It's wonderfully theatrical, but it really dealt with Reith's bisexuality. Very frankly, gave him a boyfriend on the show. He had a wife who was really upset about this, naturally. And but it's mainly about how autocrats try to control the media. And then at the National Theater, also by this guy, Jack Thorne, was this play, The Motive and the Cue. Kind of an obscure title, but it's drawn from Shakespeare. It's about John Gielgud, played by Mark Gatiss there on the left, directing Richard Burton in Hamlet in 1964, right after he married Elizabeth Taylor for the first time. And Taylor is a character. It's really Mark Gatiss's play. He does a quite uncanny personification of the gay Gielgud, even a scene with a hustler there. Johnny Flynn as Burton and Tuppence Middleton as Ms. Taylor, less compellingly written. But that's transferring to the West End in September, and I think will also likely come here. Then I went out to the Theatre Royal Windsor to see Ian McKellen on the left in the picture we have. There he is. And Roger Allam, who you may know from Endeavor and so many other movies and plays, in something called Frank and Percy. Two older men meet cute, walk on their dogs in Hampstead Heath, and end up getting together. And it's kind of a light rom-com with some serious scenes about late-in-life romance and dealing with loss. But I'd go see these two read the phone book. But it was far more entertaining than that. And then one of the best plays I saw was about a subject I don't care about, football, what we call soccer, in a very timely play. It's called Dear England, starring Joseph Fiennes of Shakespeare in Love there, as Gareth Southgate, the coach of the English national team. And again, a very theatrical, engaging production at the Big Olivier Theater. Southgate hires a psychologist, played by Gina McKee, we have her in the next slide, to work with his all-stars, and it digs deeply into the disappointments England has had since its upset victory in the World Cup in 1966 and how to overcome them. And this one is also getting a West End transfer. I don't know if it'll come here. It's about football. And then one of my favorite actors,
Ted Lasso.
Huh?
Don't you watch it?
Maybe. It's a good play. It worked for me. And again, I don't follow your.
Well, people. watch Ted Lasso and you'll get more involved.
Oh, I do. I like Ted Lasso. Yeah. Okay. Then one of my favorite actors in the world, Mark Rylance, he stars in Dr. Semmelweis. I did not know this story. He wrote this with Stephen Brown. It's about a mid 19th century, 1840s. Obstetrician in Vienna. And he started to recognize that women in the maternity ward were dying if they were handled by doctors and not if they were handled by midwives, because the doctors were coming from the autopsy room and not washing their hands. when he recognizes this pattern, the head of the hospital fires him. He said 20% death in childbirth, that's just normal. That's just natural. I mean, seriously. So it's a passionate play. The women dance around him. And he always looks like he's having a good time on stage, even though it's a very serious role. He keeps charging everybody with having blood on their hands, something we remember from the AIDS.
Literally.
War. Yes, yes. And then another very searing plague. You remember the Grenfell catastrophic fire,
yes.
2017. Well, these are in the words of the survivors. This is at the National's Dorfman Theater. It's a documentary play, kind of. It's played by actors. 72 people died of that, many of Middle Eastern extraction, all working class. It starts off with David Cameron on camera going, I'm going to get rid of regulations in this country and make everything better for business. And of course, that's how this all came about, because these inferior materials were used on the building. That's a great play. And then I went to the Royal Court Theater. They always do new stuff, which is, you know, great. One of them is called Cuckoo, directed by Vicky Featherstone there. It takes us into the kitchen there of working class women, saucy Grandma Doreen and no-nonsense Carmel and anxious Sarah and Carmel's teen daughter, Megan. And during the play, the teen daughter goes up into Grandma's room and she won't come out. So is she cuckoo? Is everybody cuckoo? It's all about how we're all being disoriented by the current situation in life. And the other play I saw there was called Wordplay, a series of skits about how we use language, which is a very hot topic these days. And it's a very nimble and top-notch troupe of five actors playing multiple roles and that avoids becoming a polemic. And then kudos to the Finborough Pub Theater. They revive long-forgotten properties, and I saw The Wind and the Rain. Now, this is a small play from 1933 about this guy, a medical student, played by Joe Pitts, who comes into a boarding house in Edinburgh with other medical students. This thing played 1,000 performances in the West End in 1933 and 6 months on Broadway. And after watching it, I cannot tell you why. It was just, there wasn't much drama. And also getting a warm reception is the revival of the Harvey Fierstein, Jerry Herman, 1983 hit musical, La Cage aux Folles, at the Open Air Theater in Regent's Park through September 26th. I can't review it because it's a late preview, but it was so encouraging to watch the audience respond to this. And it's so timely because it's really a defiant gesture to do this drag queen play in a public park. It's a very middle-class audience. They're all applauding and having a great time, especially the most gay stuff. So anyway.
Well, you have not always appreciated La Cage aux Folles in its movie versions or whatever.
Well, I certainly didn't like the American version of the movie.
No, I thought the original French version was much better.
Which was condemned by Vito Russo, who wrote The Celluloid Closet. I mean, look, I think Harvey, who wrote the book for this musical, improved on it in many ways. But the original is just, I mean, you know, this kid, he's got a drag queen mother, if you want to put it that way, and his father who runs the club. And he's upset because he's going to marry this woman who has conservative parents, and he wants the drag queen mother to be out of the picture. That's the basic plot. And, it's like, why would he do that after living with them all those years and all that kind of stuff? So I think, again, Harvey and Jerry Herman do a better job with it. And watching it in this theater, it worked for me much better.
Well, I applaud you.
In the rain.
I applaud your ability to even remember seeing most of these plays. That's quite a list. Not to mention being able to describe all of them. Well, welcome back from there.
Thank you.
Now, there's a documentary movie that is opening in New York next week at the Cinema Village, but I think is ultimately probably going to play on PBS on American Masters because their logo is on it as producers, about Bella Abzug, a documentary called Bella, This Woman's Place is in the House. It's about an hour and a half long, and it's really quite a well-done, fascinating documentary about her life, mostly about her. Well, it's everything, but it runs through her whole political life. But there is some controversy because one of her daughters, Liz Abzug, posted on Facebook that she is not supporting or endorsing the film because she is upset at how the producer and director of the film, has handled the family and some of the materials. And she's not explicit about the complaints she has, but she said she had significant disagreements with the guy who made the film. And she was supposed to be an executive producer, and in the end, she's not. There's a big thank you to her on a card at the end, and a special thank you further on, too. But it's an interesting little problem here.
She endorsed the play about her mother, where her mother was played by Harvey Fierstein.
Well, this is a documentary. There's a ton of great material in it across the years. And of course, Bella died 25 years ago. So there's no current
We love Bella.
Interview.
We love Bella. By the way, I will link to my reviews in full in the Gay City News in our email. And if you want to be on our email list, go to Gay City, go to GayUSA, GayUSA.org. And you can
say AUSATV.org.
Correct. I'm, you know, I've been away for so long.
You have, and you're having a little slow on catching up or getting up to speed, but you've done magnificently with all of this.
I'm glad you're here, Anne.
Huh?
That's why I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, that's my job. But welcome back. It's good to have you back. And really, thanks to Maren Johns for sitting in the last couple of weeks. She's doing great. And she's off to Australia to cover the last matches in the Women's World Cup.
Very sorry to see the U.S. lose by a millimeter.
I watched that game. It was they played much better than they had in previous games. It really was a big, big fight, which ended in a 0-0 tie. And then they had to go to extra time and then the penalty kicks. And at one point during the penalty kicks, you really thought the U.S. was going to win because they were ahead. But then they blew a couple of the kicks and suddenly they lost. And that was a heartbreaker. But I'm very curious to see who is going to win the whole thing, because there are a lot of appealing teams there, and it's interesting.
And it's and it's a very lesbian phenomenon.
Well, because women are out, men are not. When a male athlete comes out, suddenly that's, you know, raise the roof. But now we have, you know, scores and scores of lesbians out at the Women's World Cup.
Well, we're down to our last 30 seconds. We thank you for being with us. You know, do go to our website and sign up for our email list at gayusatv.org.
Very easy to sign up. And then we send you one email a week that tells you what's on the upcoming show. And that's it. And gives you a few extras that you don't get on the air. But we'll see you next week with more.